Next Step number 53, June 10th, 2009. Welcome to the Next Step. Hey, this is Father Voskin welcoming you back to the Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the Inner Shoot mission and is brought to you by the good folks at the Apostles Net, apostolic evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. I am so glad you're back here today, and to all the newcomers, welcome aboard. Whether you're taking a next step, you're taking a new step with us, I'm just glad you're here. Today's a special day. Well, like all days are, but it's a very special day because we finish our first year of podcasting. Thank you. I'll take that. You know, it is an exciting time today because, you know, a lot of times in life you have dreams, and sometimes, unfortunately, our dreams outrun what reality can produce. We dream a little bit more than what we can do or can achieve. And sometimes that's the case with such a grand project as a podcast. I know it sounds like a small little deal, but when you see all the hours that we put into this and all the people that are really there praying for us and working on this podcast, it really is a production. And, it was a dream. It came true. 1 year now, we've been podcasting every Wednesday, and I'm just very thankful to God for giving us this opportunity, because it is by the grace of God. There really are no major resources. We have a few good friends that have been supportive along the way, your donations, and I can't discount your sweet ears, because it is those ears that pick up these podcasts and listen to them and spread it around. Share it with your friends. Share it with your family. And it has made us the popular cast that we are. So thank you very much. I'm glad you're here today. As I promised last week, what we'd do this week, we'd go over some of the, let's say, the podcasts that are still hanging. Close up some doors that were left open with some topics, some metaphysical realities, irrational concepts, whatever they may be. We'll try to put I don't want to say shut the door, because to me these podcasts give us opportunity to keep moving along, but maybe just continue. Let's continue on some of the topics that we had. And in the same time, we'll look at some of the email. I did tell you last week that we will look at some of the email that people wrote. And I've got to tell you, I am so thankful for the email that comes. But as I was looking through it this week, I got to tell you, it's kind of awkward for me. You know, there's a lot of good writing in there. It's a lot of personal writing where it says to me, you know, keep up the good work. You're doing a great job. This was sorely needed. We want this kind of podcast. And it kind of like, I don't know. I don't want to give you any false sense of modesty, because we all like to be patted on the back. But I do want to say that, you know, this podcast isn't about a podcast. It's about Armenian Orthodoxy. It's about something that goes back to the beginning of time and clicks with us today. So if it's okay with you, what I'd like to do is I'll give you a little synopsis of what the email is about. We'll talk about it briefly and we'll move on and we'll get ready for our next year. But I got a great show for you today. Good one coming up. And let's start it off. Let's kick it off with a song. And how about a birthday song for us? I get to pick out the birthday song, don't I? Well, don't I always? Enjoy. Thank you. That was an excerpt from Malangueña, a very popular song, but brought to us in a very unique fashion by Oud Virtuoso Jambelezikjan. That's on his neoclassical Oud album. And I picked that song out especially for us today as a birthday song. Why not? Because doesn't that capture what Next Step is all about? It's international in flavor. It doesn't belong to any one group of people, but it does have a unique way of being presented, much like this piece, Malangueña, was presented to us today on an instrument that is known throughout the Middle East, that is very dear to the Armenian people, and needs someone with expertise to really move those strings, to speak to the strings of our heart. And likewise, Armenian Orthodoxy doesn't belong to one group of people. It belongs to the world. It connects us not to the beginnings of an ancient civilization, but to the beginning of time. And it reverberates in our soul, in everything that we do, even today in our lives, as complicated as they are, with technology booming at light speed right now. It has a moment to reverberate with that beginning of time, with that sound that started off at the very beginning. Armenian Orthodoxy. Armadoxy, as we sometimes call it. Armadoxy, something that is really beyond groups, but talks to us in a very special way. Well, I got to tell you about Malangueña, that version that you just heard. The first time that I heard that, I was on the road driving to a studio out in Glendale where they were doing the taping for the Armenia Fund. This takes place every Thanksgiving. And as I was going to do my segment, this is probably late 90s, I had the radio on in the car, and there was Jambelezikjan playing from the Armenia Fund. He was playing Malangueña. And I had my son Vodajan next to me, and I said to him, "Listen to that. Isn't that incredible?" And we were listening, and we said, "Wow, I wonder who's keeping up with him," because it actually sounded like there were two ouds playing at the same time, one strumming the chords while the other was doing the melody lines. And we're thinking, "Wow, what other oud player is there that could keep up at that speed and that pace?" And we got to the studio, and there was Jambelezikjan just finishing the piece, sitting there alone. And I've got to tell you, that is like, it was just too much to realize that those fingers are able to take those strings and produce something as incredible as that. Malangueña. And that's what Next Step. That's why I chose it for today, because we need to really stand in awe of this beautiful mystery that we have as our faith. A faith that is not in books, it is not on written pages, but is speaking in the heart. That's how we began this podcast a year ago. We started off with, not with Malangueña, but with Horul Horin, the expression of the Armenian mystical experience, Armenian mysticism. In other words, not everything can be defined by our words, by our understanding, but there are things that transcend us and are greater than us. If you say you understand God, then it's no longer God. And so many times we as human beings try with our limited resources to understand the unlimited, the infinite. In fact, there's a new book that just came out. I believe it might be in the bookstores right about now when you hear this podcast. It's by Robert Wright with a W. It's called The Evolution of God. And again, he sparks up the debate between science and religion. And you know, we do this in the West a lot. There is a disconnect between reason and religion. Why? Because, well, first of all, that we say that it's like comparing apples and oranges. Actually, all it is, it's a very logical kind of expression. We like logic. We like to put things into categories. But when you get into the realm of religion, mysticism, spirituality, you can't categorize them as you would, say, a bunch of books. A librarian would take many books and is and can easily categorize them. You take many, many songs. You could put those songs into different categories. But you can't do that with religious experience because, first of all, there's a personal dimension to it. As human beings, we've each had experiences that cannot be reconciled with reality, with things that are beyond reason. But reason makes sense. We like logic. We like logic, and religion doesn't fall into that. So why try to bring it in there? You know, this is really one of the big problems with the Western idea of spirituality. We want to define it. And there are things, you have to admit, that are undefinable. We have to say it's okay. It's okay that we can't define it. It's okay that it's undefinable. I know it's real. And once we start accepting this, we start accepting one another. Because then we realize what God meant, what Christ meant when he came and said, the kingdom is for everyone. In other words, we all have our ways of expression. But in the end, we are all children of God. We are all created in the image of God. We have a heart that bleeds. We have feelings. We have emotions. We have care. We love one another. We take care of one another. And we extend compassion to one another. These are things that you cannot define by categories of saying that, well, logically, this is why we love one another. Or there is some reason to be behind it. There is absolutely no reason to the love that God had for us. There is absolutely no reason why he loved us the way he did. It is beyond our logic. And in the same way, you have to exercise that love beyond logic. You have to reach out to people. It's crazy, isn't it? You know why it's crazy? It defies everything you've been taught. You do things for profit. You do things with motives. And what we're saying is, reach out to people who can't pay you back. Love people who can't love you back. Love people who you really have a hard time even existing with. Go ahead, love them. Because that's what God did. God did that to us. Despite our inability to pay back, he still loved us. Why? Well, for one reason. Give us an example. That's the only way that we could continue on this world. And you look at your life right now. I don't need to tell you. I don't need to get preachy or anything. Just look at the example in your life. Every time you've exerted love, it has hurt. Sometimes you haven't received it back. But let me tell you, in your life, you wouldn't go back. You don't want to go back. Because you know that the life you have today, who you are today, has become better because of that love. Because of your ability to love and to have shared. And that's where we began the next step a year ago. And I got to tell you, it's been a fun ride. We've done a lot of stuff. We've done stuff that I can't even believe. That's what I was saying a few minutes ago. Given the resources that we have, I can't even believe that we were able to do all that. Do you remember the China Olympics and how we got people motivated to start writing against the Olympics, how to focus in on what's going on in Darfur, how we followed Gabriel and his team back in August in Darfur, in the Chad refugee camps? We remember how we used the podcast to motivate people around this incredible idea that we can divest and take away money from the Sudanese government so that they can then no longer buy those weapons of destruction. We use the next step as a means of discussing politics. Yes, politics and our faith. Do you remember those days when we had a gentleman named McCain and another one named Obama, and they were going at it in Rick Warren's church, and we took it to the next step when we discussed it through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy?
There's a place. When I
yes, definitely, those were some fun steps we took. And it was great, great conversation, some great ideas that were being floated around about spirituality, about what it means to be spiritual in this world. We spent many of the sessions of Next Step talking about that spiritual world connected with our political lives. In other words, political, not Democrat and Republican, but political. How do we survive in this world? What do we need to do to really survive? And then, of course, toward the end of the year, I think one of the big, big accomplishments of this ministry was the production of the Spirit Album, the next generation of Armenian spiritual music by our good friend Gor Mkhitaryan.
Yes, I'd come up so sush haskatsa. Uyer parmatneris veradarza. Ins getashemin him ganzarani. Dran vera patrast kachvatser banalin.
And it was through your prayers and through this podcast where we were able to give so much credibility to this new expression. And I've got to tell you, Spirit is still out there. And, you know, if you haven't checked it out, go to our website. This is not a commercial. It belongs in every Next Stepper's library collection. The Spirit Hoki album is just really one of those fine pieces of music that will transcend time. And it's my prayer that our continued relationship with Gor Mkhitaryan, such a fine artist, that this will yield something big on the worship stage, let's say. So we're looking forward to that, and of course that's going into the Next Step. How am I filled with cliches today? Certainly music has been a very big part of this ministry, and we've used music in very different ways. We even had the audacity to claim that maybe Beethoven was orthodox. Yes, do you remember those days? We even looked at Beethoven's Fifth. I think we spent a couple sessions on that. And what days those were. I have to admit, that's probably one of my favorite podcasts where we got into that music, the meat of it, and really talked about transcendence. That music didn't belong to any particular century, any group of people, or any culture, but transcended time. And so too with these artists who are able to do that. We focused a lot on art, a lot on music, and really brought together many of the different dimensions. But I don't want to say that this has been an artsy show. We've talked about science, we've talked about mathematics, we've talked about the ability to use those numbers in a way that really looks at not only the science of the numbers, but not only the reality of our lives, but brings in the spiritual aspect and connects it to that real world. In a few minutes, we're going to be hearing poet William Archila, who gave such a beautiful rendering of a couple selections. We're going to hear him again today. But as you listen to these artists that we play and that we feature here on The Next Step, it's an opportunity for you, too, to look at your own artistic side. And you say, well, I don't know how to paint. I don't know how to write. Everybody has an artistic side. And that is expressed sometimes in words, sometimes in music, but sometimes in the quietness, in the solemnity of what we call life, just being able to be artistic with your life. And I know each of you has it. In fact, God has created us as these individuals who are not just logic, who are not just reason, but are artistic. And we have that ability to express that art in different dimensions. But probably most importantly, Next Step became a vehicle by which we could talk about an ancient faith that is really not known by too many people. whether it's the Easter message, which is not about bunnies, it's not even about an empty tomb, but it's about victory, a victory that we can all share in our lives, about the different Sundays of Lent that we went through and the different messages that came to us, about redemptive quality of life, of being able to renew ourselves into a new life. And that message was the one that kept on coming through and through each of these podcasts. And as the message that you wrote to me about, the message that has helped so many people. And I thank you for giving me this opportunity, giving us this opportunity to become apostles, apostolic evangelism in this electronic world. That's what Apostle is about, certainly what Next Step is about. But that brings me to the next point. You've asked me in your letters, and you've asked me through your emails, about the mechanics of this. Let me spend a few minutes talking about the mechanics of the Next Step. Yes, sometimes it felt like we were in a cartoon with all these little beavers and chipmunks and monkeys rolling around the wheels and spinning around and making this thing happen. You'd believe that that's how we put this together sometimes. And other times we just take a stop and a big deep breath and just say, thank God that we have some beautiful people that are interested in making this work in the way that it does. And we began our podcasts with a generous donation of computer equipment by a gentleman up in the San Francisco Bay Area named George Igmanasian. And he gave us all of the equipment that we needed to really get started. We purchased some microphones and we used a Macintosh for the early shows, actually up until show number 40. Up until 40, we used a Macintosh and GarageBand, and we were very happy with that. But we did hit some limitations of the program and the system speed, and it was right after that, number 41 was produced for the first time on a PC. And we used a program called Mixcraft, and I don't mind giving a nice plug for this because it is really a fantastic program. It is by a group called Acoustica, and Mixcraft is the name of the program, and you could find the information about it on the internet. But I have to tell you, so much flexibility flexibility that it allowed us to really take the next step to a next step, technically. And you wouldn't appreciate this until you had to sit down and really have to mix this, because it does take time. For the 52 episodes that we have, I have to say each one of the episodes takes on an average about 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours to produce. So just do the math on that, and you're looking at how many weeks, put it all together, about a month and a half of life spent just putting together these podcasts and going over to the PC considerably lessened the time. And that's thanks to this program called Mixcraft. And so that's what we're producing on right now. You can do some comparisons, listen to the early shows, and you will hear some differences in quality, and quality one way or another is really in the ears of the beholder, so I'll leave it up to you to judge. But I think that we're not suffering. We're really having a great time doing these, and I hope that you're not suffering listening to these. I guess you wouldn't be listening to them. Isn't that the easiest way to get rid of something you don't enjoy? Just turn it off. So I imagine anybody who's listening at this point is enjoying it at this point. So that's really the mechanics of it. But the nuts and bolts happen after we produce the show, after the recording, because our producer, Susie, her production talents really go into the internet, and she's able to take that MP3 file that we produce and broadcast it to a broad audience through the social networks and really make that MP3 file into what we call a podcast. In other words, you're able to receive this on your MP3 player. You're able to receive it on Apple's iTunes store, all because of what she does, the coding that she does, the encoding, and getting it distributed. And that takes a few hours in itself. So it's a production. And like I said, I thank God for this opportunity to be able to do this. Because really the budget for it is being absorbed by a very generous group of people at the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center in Glendale. The budget for it has been absorbed by them all along. And the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center is, when I say that, just has some great people over there who pray for the ministry, who worship together, who get together and really feel that this is an important ministry, that it doesn't belong to just a church, but it is a ministry that is in our hands, that needs to be distributed. And I hope that if you feel the same, certainly you can become a part of that. And that's available, of course, at inissues.org, or just check on many of the links that we have over there, opportunities to donate, and along with donation to be able to participate. Participate physically, yes. Get involved in it. And certainly we saw the power of the internet this few months ago. I guess I was going to say this last month, but it's already been almost 2 months when we had our famine. And we were joined by people fasting in Armenia. So here we were in Glendale fasting and raising money, and there they were in Armenia. And we were all connected through invisible wires, but certainly something that very visible called the internet. And it was all on faith. Remember that? We didn't see, we didn't know how it worked, but it did work. And there we were praying together, sharing together, and we raised about $30,000 that went out to children in hunger. And more importantly, it raised awareness about that awful problem that shouldn't exist today. That 29,000 children die of hunger every single day. So in retrospect, when you look at a year of next steps, you realize we've come a long way and we've done quite a bit. And I'm thankful. I thank God for this opportunity, and I always thank you for your prayers. I'm glad that you're aboard. I'm glad you're walking with us, and we look forward to new steps that we'll be taking together, because there are so many things that we are going to be doing and we are setting our sights on. And I've got some great news to tell you. You know, we even did a vodcast. Do you remember that video podcast a few months ago? Well, it got picked up, and I'm pleased to tell you that probably in the next couple months, this next step will probably have a video component to it. In other words, you'll be able to see our pretty faces over here. Certainly, it's a great team that we have over here. Susie, our producer, and of course, Ken in the booth. We can't forget about him. A lot of questions about his marital status. Yes, ladies, he is still available, and I won't go into the details. What happened a few months ago? Okay, Ken, yes. I'm sorry. I know it's personal, but just a great guy, and we're really happy that he's with us, and he puts together all this. He really knows how to work these machines and engineers it in such a way that it sounds like a podcast. Whoa! Listen, we have a lot of fun together too. And so we're just pleased that we got through a year. Like I said, it was a dream that came true. And I say all this as a prelude to one message that I have for you. Don't give up on your dreams. Don't give up on them. You never know when they're going to come true. I mean, having a weekly show was a dream that I had over 20 years ago. And we started off in Cupertino. We had a weekly show called A Few Minutes with Deadhide, which was geared towards Sunday school audiences. Then in Pasadena, we were able to take it out to the Glendale audience in a very special programming that we did over the television, over cable TV. And then it went on to the internet when we had our first podcast, our first broadcast, actually, when we broadcast the Divine Liturgy in the year 2000. And it kept going, but it didn't really take form the way it has right now. And it took a lot of praying, a lot of praying. And I have some great prayer partners. I, of course, have my sister Anush, who's really pushed this and said, let's take the next step. And of course, my wife, Susan, whose prayers, and I guess becomes the first critic, becomes the first person who's able to listen to one of these shows. Every week she gets the first crack at it. So it's people coming together and people supporting one another that really push us to put one foot in front of the other foot. And I hope that these podcasts, these messages, this ministry does exactly the same for you. Because the next step ultimately isn't my step, it's your step. And each of us takes steps in our lives. But I encourage you, take the next step in your life. Whatever you're doing, this is a great time. You know why? Because you're alive. One day there's going to come a time when you can't do it. You're going to want to do it, but you can't. You'll be dead. So might as well take advantage of this one simple fact. You're living. God loves you, and God has given you that beautiful favor today. He's told you that I am everything. You're not going to understand it, but deep down, I'm the one who created it all. And I go back to the beginning of time, and I'm inside of you right now. So take advantage of it. Take the next step with us. And go back. You know what? If you get a chance, check out epostle.net. It's apostolic evangelism for an electronic world. Epostle.net. Just put it in and go to the archive section. Every one of these podcasts is there. And you can find just about every topic that we talked about is something that pertains to you. The life today, all viewed through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We've been very fortunate to have some great contributors to this podcast. We've had, of course, Harach Chilingerian coming to us from London with the global perspective. We've had Ani Burr doing Bubbles with Ani. And of course, those do take us up quite a long way up, don't they? They inspire us all the time. And of course, Gor Mkhitaryan with his music and his talent that he's lent to us so many times throughout the year, and he continues to do so. And most recently, we had the fortune of hearing William Archila. He was on our podcast last week in an interview. Today, he's going to continue with a reading from his most recent book called The Art of Exile. Here he is to a backdrop of, well, who else? John Coltrane.
Bury this pig. Behind the cornfield, we scale the mountainside, looking for a foothold among the crags, rooting out weeds, trampling on trash, the trek as if it were a holy crusade. Bodies armored, mounted on horses, banners fluttering in the air. Then one morning, we stumble upon the thing, dead, cramped in a ditch, covered in ants, trotters grimy, a purple snout of flies, and not a dollop of blood, but a thick piece of hide, cradling about 50 pounds of hog. Someone said, "Kush, kush," as if to awaken the thing. I thought about the carcass, blood slick, staggering into the room, grumbling and drowning as if deep in the mud, eyes buckled in fear, bones breaking down to the ground, open to the chop and tear of human hands, pork and lard, 4 feet, fat back cut into slabs, an organ fattened and butchered. It continued for weeks, a few of us, meeting in the afternoons, just to look at the steaming belly, maggots stealing the gray of the brain. Each time, one more barefoot boy probing the eye socket with a stick. Some of us came back armed with picks and bars, shovels dusty in our hands, until the ground groaned with war, the sky fell and cracked the earth. How was I to know? They would be hooked, hacked, snouts smashed on the wall, their bodies corkscrews on the floor. How was I to know? I would bury this pig rock after rock.
Poet William Archilla from his book, The Art of Exile. And I've got to tell you, if you didn't hear his interview last week, please go and download it, because it is really worth listening to this incredible human being who brings in such a diversity to his writings. But get to know him more importantly through his writing. You can get The Art of Exile at Amazon.com or wherever good books are sold. I did save William's piece toward the end today because I think it's important that when we look at artwork like this, we do understand that it's in reaction to something. It is in reaction sometimes to our biggest tragedies, our biggest downfalls, that we are able to rise and create, engage in that creative process. Certainly whether it's the next step, Armadoxy that we're talking to, it's in the context of a lack of that spirituality that we are able to produce this. And therefore, when you hear art forms, whether it's William's poetry or John Coltrane taking that next step on the sax, you understand it is in reaction to something that has taken place in life. And most often it is because of the tragedies, because of the difficulties, that we find a resurrection opposite those crucifixions. Those resurrections is what we center on. And today I wanted to take it to a new level, so to speak, because in the past I've talked about the Twilight movie. I've shared with you some of the feelings that I've had. And right now there's this movie called Angels and Demons, which right now Angels and Demons is probably off of everybody's radar screen because it's been out for a month. But there'll be a new Angels and Demons. There'll be a new Da Vinci Code coming out. And I want to talk not specifically about the movie as much as what are these movies, what are these contents that we keep seeing and reacting to. People get all bent out of shape about many different things without realizing that you have the greatest control inside of you. Don't go and see it if you don't like it. You know, sometimes you hear somebody on the radio make some vulgar comment. You see something on television, you say, how despicable. You know, you cannot censor that. You can't, even if you tried, you can't censor that. But what you can do, what you do have power, is to influence or curtail it inside of your own life. You can turn it off. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to listen to it. I mean, like I said, you who are listening to this podcast at this point are doing so because you want to, right? If somebody didn't want to listen to this podcast, they wouldn't, if they didn't enjoy it, they wouldn't be at this point in this cast. They wouldn't download it. They certainly wouldn't put it on their MP3 player. They certainly wouldn't turn on or turn up the volume. And same way in your life, you have complete control over those things that affect you. You need to be able to be cognizant of that and realize that in an open society, especially in the globalized society in which we live in today, you cannot censor and you cannot control for other people, but you definitely have some great power to be able to stop it within your own life and the people that are precious to you, that are important to you. The art of protest, the art of protesting something, is very important in our lives, to be able to say that I am not in agreement with that and therefore I will protest. And one of the means of protest has always been to boycott or to stand away. Certainly most recently, when we get to this movie called Angels and Demons, there's always been this trend of like, let's boycott it and let's show them. That's certainly in the right of people. And this happened during the Da Vinci Code and many, many, many years ago, 25 years or so ago, it happened when a movie came out called The Last Temptation of Christ. Thank you. And what I'd like to do with you today is share an article that I wrote back then, when The Last Temptation of Christ came out. And the reason why is twofold. First of all, after I wrote this article, I received one of the... I got to tell you, until today, I have that letter, and it has a very special part in my life and a place in my heart. It was written by the late, great Archbishop Dinan Nersoyan, who was a giant in my time, in my generation. And for him to take the time to write me such an extensive letter about this article and basically putting his stamp of approval gave me the inspiration and gave me the encouragement to take another step. And we produced the Window publications during the 90s, basically because we had Archbishop Nersoyan's approval on what we were doing. It started off as a St. Nerses journal and then evolved into this magazine called Window. And one day, hopefully we'll have all of those online for people to really sift through and see the incredible work that was done back there. But The Last Temptation of Christ also had a very special meaning for me because it was a novel that I had read in college. It was written by Nicholas Kazantzakis. Most people know him as the man who wrote Zorba the Greek. Nicholas Kazantzakis had this idea, The Last Temptation of Christ. Imagine Jesus on the cross between the words Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. He stops and he is visited by the devil, by Satan himself, who gives him one last temptation to look at a world if he came down off of the cross. To imagine himself with a wife, with a family. Imagine himself dying not on a cross, but of old age, with his friends, Peter and Andrew, and not having a Paul to visit on the road to Damascus, but no Christianity afterwards, but basically a Jesus in old age. And Jesus looks at that, and he refuses that last temptation, and he continues to utter the words, "Into your hands I commit my spirit." That was the last temptation of Christ. And during the 1980s, it was turned into a movie. And again, it received incredible reviews. Yes, positive, but more people were making noise about it because they were offended that Jesus was shown with a wife, with children, and they were offended that there was a possibility outside of the biblical narrative. And so back in 1980s, a young priest, I wrote this article not so much about the movie, but because an incident had happened in our community, and as a young priest, it had shaken me up. This is the article I wrote. In early August, as the movie The Last Temptation of Christ was about to be released, our community experienced one of its greatest losses. A young innocent girl was taken away from us by cancer. The following was written just prior to the release of the movie and in the aftermath of the suffering and pain that came with the tragedy of losing a dear and loving child of God. I offer it here to our readers as a priest struggles with a cross and as a meditation on that cross. Early Sunday morning, I was awoken by the call of a parishioner. Her daughter, 25, was suffering from cancer and breathing her last at the hospital. As I raced on to Santa Teresa Hospital, many thoughts raced through my head, as they usually do at these moments. At the hospital, a young, frail, and tired girl looked at me with a last look of hope. She squeezed my hand to acknowledge my presence. The nurses asked me to leave the ICU as they placed more tubes into her nostrils. I came back into the room, but now she was unconscious. The hand that only a few minutes ago had shown signs of life was now limp and cold. I offered some prayers and read a scripture into her ear, not certain whether or not she would hear. A few moments later, it did not matter anymore. It was over. A young life, which had not experienced much of that life, had ended. And so begin the questions. Why? Why her? Why now? Why cancer at all? An injustice had been played out. It wasn't fair. The wrong person was robbed. The deeper questions begin to surface. What is life about? Did God take her life? Does God hear our prayers? And for me as a priest, the role and purpose of my ministry is questioned. Is it fate? Is our destiny written out for us? If so, then what is my ministry all about? These are questions I have asked and continue to ponder. Philosophies have been written about these questions. I imagine today many a rational being questions the nature and purpose of life. Many have rebelled against a seemingly silent God. Some have turned against God in this questioning, while for the most part, the questioning has been the vehicle by which many have come to know God. It is a real life temptation. Living through the last minutes of a human being's life awakens our senses, which have become so dull from mundane daily experiences. As you focus in on how delicate and fragile life is, it becomes difficult to justify or to be concerned with trivialities. Over the past few months, much controversy has revolved around the film The Last Temptation of Christ. The cries and worries of Christians increase, as does my tolerance for their illogical and petty thinking. It is difficult for me to sympathize with these protesters. I do plan to see the movie, not because of all the controversy, nor because I am a proponent of First Amendment rights, nor because of the pre-opening hype by Universal. Rather, my reasons for wanting to see the film are purely personal. The novel by Kazantzakis, on which the film is based, was influential in my life and my decision to enter into the priesthood. I am interested to see how this imaginative yet powerful story has been adapted to film. We somehow very easily play into the traps of promoters. It is comparable to the man who assassinates to gain publicity. We know that this is his motive, yet we continue to broadcast the news. We make him the hero he sets out to be. In the same manner, Universal Studios seeks publicity for a movie. So why pay for it? Allow a select few to preview it. Provide sketchy scripts to fuel the fires of controversy. Instant publicity. We know we are falling into the trap, but we do it anyway. You see, the story by Kazantzakis is researched well and thought out. The crucified Messiah is given his last temptation on the cross. He is given the opportunity to see his life beyond the cross, to know the joys of a family life, share memories with friends, and live to a ripe old age. He is given the opportunity to have the same dreams as do all men, and to be as all men. Yet he resists that temptation, says no to all the trappings of the world, and opts to do his Father's will instead. I do not know how faithful the script plays to the Kazantzakis novel, but the storyline is not offensive to me. What some are objecting to is the portrayal of Jesus in an irreverent manner. That is, possibly he may have felt human feelings. In the movie, an actor playing Jesus Christ is said to do all manner and things that are unbefitting our image of a savior. He even has a sexual encounter with Mary Magdalene. Why are human emotions and feelings equated with frailty and signs of irreverence? Underlying these protests is the fear of the freedom of expression and thought. Not for the novelist, but for ourselves. We are afraid to think and use the mind God has given us. religion has become more or less an accept or reject proposition. The Bible tells me so. My preacher says it. I believe it. I accept the Lord. We want to order and receive our religion and God as fast as we receive our Big Mac, with the same smiling service and even some change back for our efforts. Unfortunately, life is not that easy, and neither are the answers religion supplies. Marx is correct in his assessment of religion being the opium of the people, not because it is, but because people use it as such. It is easier and quicker to grab that Big Mac than it is to sit at a nice restaurant, wait, order, wait, and be served. But few would compare the quality of the meal. It is the same with religion. It is easier to grab a religion because of its convenience value, but of what quality will it be? Will it survive tests and temptations? Jesus' religion did. There is no sin in thinking. Questions must be asked. It is our way of coming to terms with the inconsistencies of life. Questioning is a means of spiritual growth. Jesus, in the gospel, does not force us to follow him. He gives us alternatives. He gives us food for thought. He allows us to think, to question, and make decisions to follow him. A young man dies on a cross. A young girl dies in my arms on a bed in a cancer ward. A young man asks that the cup pass away. A young girl asks for another cup of water. We must ask, why the cross? I must ask, why cancer? Why her? These questions do not alienate me from God, but grant me a closer relationship. We struggle and suffer for those answers, but the solutions are there, and their enduring power is ever so heightened when reached through that struggle. Jesus is tempted with life beyond the cross. We are tempted daily with life beyond our crosses. The difference is that we succumb to our temptations. We opt for the better life. We want better houses, bigger cars. We choose to pollute our environments with the threat of unhealthy life. We continue to kill for the sake of peace. We do not say no to the trappings of life. With the problems and pains of this world, it seems trivial and a waste of energy for so many Christians to be protesting a movie. Are they truly scared that in questioning, some may lose faith, rather than direct their protest toward the idea of God living as man? Perhaps some of that energy can be spent in protesting man living as God. Where are the protests when the shoot 'em up Rambo movies are released? Where are the protesters when the environment is polluted? Where are the cries of protest as we escalate military spending and allow our homeless to rot on the street? Yes, there are protesters, but I doubt they are the same ones who protest this movie. The movie The Last Temptation of Christ is a temptation for all of us. Some may resist, some may seek it. If it grants us the opportunity to think, then it has done enough. It has raised us from the levels of acceptance to thought, which is the role and true use of all good religion. It's nice when we are consistent, isn't it? Oh, I like that. Anyway, thank you for listening. That was a reading from The Last Temptation of Christ, an article I had written back in the late 1980s. 80s. And it brings us to the end of this first year of podcasting, The Next Step. We look forward to having you back again next week when we will start our second year of podcasting. In the meantime, I want to remind you that all of our websites, inissues.org, has all of the latest information about what we're doing. And of course, epostle.net is where you can log on and get not only this podcast, but every other podcast that came before it since the beginning of time. And we invite you to go there and send your friends there, because there's a lot of good information that we're looking forward to share and finding sponsors, corporate donors, people that can make a difference in pushing this ministry to the next level. Listen, for all the good people who make this podcast a reality, for Susie, our producer, I can't say enough of all the magic that she puts into this show, for Huda Chow in London, for Ani with her bubbles, and of course, Ken, who is up in the booth. You are a genius, Ken. That's all I have to say about that. You are a genius and really a talent for taking such small resources and doing some great things. Like the gospel says, you've been faithful in a little, I will now give you much more. It is that prayer that we have for the next step in the coming year. It is the prayer that I invite you to share with us today. And so for all these good people, this is Father Boskin inviting you again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.